Okay, welcome. I'm Susan Hofer, and this is the first time I've done this, so I'm a little bit nervous, but you all look so comforting and welcoming, so let's talk about smart classroom management. I'm glad to see you all here, and today I hope to just give you some tools that I have recently discovered and found so useful. Tools that you can use to have a successful school year. I'm kind of passionate about this subject, and maybe it's kind of embarrassing to admit how long I taught before I realized some of this. And so I want to let you in on a little bit of my journey and my story and resources. So I want to say right up front that a lot of what I'm talking about is taken directly from Smart Classroom Management. I'm going to be referring a lot to this particular book, The Smart Classroom Management Way. I have a handout like as a summary at the end. You can come help yourself to them. Take notes in the meantime, I guess. Okay, so some questions, first of all. Is classroom management important? Like, does it matter how you do it? Does it matter if you have a plan or not and have thought it through? Does it matter if you have planned routines and procedures? Do you have classroom rules and who makes them? And if a child breaks a rule, do you know what you're going to do? Or are you just going to wing it and hope they all behave? Okay, so the author of this book, I do want to give credit to Michael Linson and The Smart Classroom Management Way. And then he also has a website that I find very helpful. I discovered this the summer of 2018. I was browsing Pinterest or something, and I came across this 14...
There was a lady here that did not have a tablet. Are you in this room? We have got a tablet for you. Apparently not. Okay, thank you.
I discovered that, I think it was this 14 questions to ask yourself before the first day of school. That might have been one of the first articles I found. And I read down through the list and I was like, no, I can't answer these questions positively. Like, I don't know, that's what got me started looking into it and looking into the website more. And I'll write the website on the board. And there's a huge archive of articles on smart classroom management. And you can also sign up for weekly emails that seemed to address exactly what I had dealt with that week. Sometimes it was really neat how that worked. There's also a purchase and download, the Smart Classroom Management Elementary Plan for Elementary Classes. Anyway, I just wanted to give proper credit to what I'm sharing. These resources have basically been a turning point in my teaching career. So what smart classroom management is, it's having a very clear plan for your classroom. Your routines, your procedures, your rules and consequences. It's about then teaching and modeling that plan and following through with it. So it might seem like an overwhelming amount of information. I want to give some guiding principles, like some quotes that just have stuck with me, and I've incorporated them in my classroom, and they've become real. I mean, I've learned why they work, why it helps. But so we'll go over some of those, and then I'm going to tell you like how I set up my classroom, what it looks like, practical ways, right down to how to hand out consequences. And remember, this might sound a little bit like, this is the only way to do it, but I'm passionate about it and I'm sharing it with you. Take it or leave it. Like don't feel like my classroom ran perfectly because it doesn't. So these are tools you can use and have the classroom experience that you want. Doesn't depend on who is in your classroom. Doesn't depend on where you teach. It doesn't depend on what other teachers and classes in your school are doing or not doing. So one of the first things that really resonated with me was that excitability is one of the main causes of misbehavior. I was like, oh, yes, it is. And I kind of started realizing that's why job time in the afternoon at school, or when the moms would all come in and have a party, birthday party for the teacher, or another thing I do in my classroom, it's kind of traditional, is we have a Mother's Day tea party Friday afternoon before Mother's Day. And I realized when I thought about it that those are the times in my classroom that the children just, you know, got a little antsy or got a little noisy. And if I stopped to think about it, they were feeling a little unsure of what was going to happen next. And I was like, you know what, I feel sorry for them. If I would explain, you know, this is what we're going to do, and then after that's done, this is what we're going to do next. And if we, oh, the one time I told them, if we get finished up with the tea party a little bit before school's actually out, you can go outside and you can play softball, and some of you can invite the mothers to play with you. We had a plan, and it was like they kind of calmed down. That was one little part that could often become a little bit loose-ended, or they weren't sure what to do, and then therefore they would act up. And I know job time, I think that's something common in our Mennonite schools where the children help with cleaning jobs. And I know that that was something that could easily get out of hand. I mean, you turn children loose in the hallway and expect them to behave. I've really kind of pared that down in the last school year. Well, just because of some of the other restrictions we had to have last year, I didn't have them doing a lot of cleaning jobs. But I would follow through. I would send one child at a time to clap erasers or empty trash, and just make sure I'm occasionally there, watching what they're doing, making sure that they were doing what I had told them to do. Excitability, it's like uncertainty of what is going to happen and when it's going to happen and what we're supposed to do that creates excitability, which then causes misbehavior. Or tension, not being sure what the teacher actually wants me to do. And another problem that I discovered about myself is I talk too much, or I talk too fast to my students. So I'll have to remember that right here and now. But so that brings me to the next point. Another thing that really clicked with me or helped was a mistake I realized I was making is I needed to slow down and talk less. One thing Smart Classroom Management says, he says, teachers usually talk too much, and if they're losing control, they talk way too much. So I know that. I know sometimes if I need to address something with the students, so I sit down in the front of the classroom to talk to them, and I'm not exactly sure what all I wanted to tell them, and pretty soon I feel like I'm kind of preaching and I'm losing their interest. I know that's a problem I have, talking too much. So I've learned to try to slow down, talk clearly, meet their eyes, stand in one place while I'm talking to them, and pause often. There's this little trick that, you know, you call for everyone's attention and you pause. That's that normal little pause. And then pause a little longer because they can lose you in that little pause. And that awkward extra second, oh, okay, I need to listen. Make sure you have everyone's attention before you go on. So children can tune you out in that little interval. I even do this for noon prayer. We stand for school or stand at school at lunchtime for prayer, and I've told someone to pray, or I tell them to stand, and then maybe when I'm praying, and then I'll pause, bow our heads and close our eyes, and then I start praying. Just that little pause to calm everything down. And when you are giving instructions in your classroom, speak clearly and slowly, and resist the urge to just repeat yourself. Or say your class is going through a routine, talking them through the routine. Try not to do that. Because if you're constantly repeating what you told the children, they are not going to listen the first time because you are going to tell them again later. So make sure you have everyone's attention before you speak. Don't be giving instructions while children are still working or putting their books away. Anyway. Okay, and then one of the next points is be consistent. The more I work on my own consistency, the more sympathy I have for parents. Because consistency is hard. It is hard to be consistent. It's much easier said than done. Everybody knows we need to be consistent. But what really makes this powerful, if you always do what you said you were going to do, like the children, like you follow through with what you said you were going to do, they can trust you. And they know that if Miss Susan said, then that's what we're going to do. And if we don't, then she'll follow through with it. The respect level rises dramatically when they trust you to always do what you said you would do. So therefore, you must know what it is you want them to do. And another thing in all of this, this does not mean you need to be harsh and frowning. Be consistently kind and pleasant to your children. I think Michael Linson says that thing about not smiling till Thanksgiving. No, that's nonsense. Smile and be welcoming. Don't lecture and scold. And then, I know I'm kind of going rapidly over some of these principles, and we'll get into the practical part of it later. The difficult students in your class that maybe you know before they get there that they have that label, treat them as regular members of the class. Don't hover around them trying to prevent misbehavior, being ready to guide them back to what they're doing. Just treat them as though they are your most well-behaved child. Okay, another quote that really, this resonated with me and has helped me a lot in classroom management. Don't move on until you are getting what you want from your students. And sometimes I struggle with knowing, okay, if it's taking them a while to move into the next routine, there's probably something that I should have explained more clearly. But if, for instance, with history, we have little folders that I have to add papers to every now and then, and so I've handed out papers and they're putting them in their folders. Move through it. Make sure everybody is keeping up with you so you're not running back and repeating what you had told them to this child and then to that child. Don't move on until you are getting what you want from your students. So pause often and observe and be sure everyone has followed the instruction before you move on. This is another quote. This one is so good, I'm going to write it on the board. And I think this is something that paramedics use, that slow is smooth, and then smooth is fast. So maybe the best way to talk about this, applying this right now, is at the beginning of the school year, taking what feels like extra time to thoroughly teach routines and procedures and classroom rules and what happens if a rule is broken. For several weeks, that's your number one goal, will set you up for so much smoother sailing later in the year, and might feel like you're losing time at the beginning, but you will gain it later. And just other things in school, I just often catch myself thinking about this, that slow is smooth, and then smooth is fast. Then you can move more quickly once you have everything has been explained clearly, so then it's smooth. Another thing I've learned to do here with Smart Classroom Management is take time to observe your students while they are working. Now, I know most of you will probably be teaching in multi-grade classrooms, and I've done that too, and it's busy. It really, really is. And sometimes I can get to the end of a day and I can, yes, I know that's where we fell apart because went over time in devotions or got in late from recess or I read extra page at story time. Anyway, but when you have everyone working independently, this feels awkward, but I've learned to do this so everyone's back at their desks working and they know what they're doing, and I just kind of will stand out of sight, maybe toward the back, or not out of sight, but toward the back of the classroom, not up front, and I just observe them working. I resist the urge to be checking books or shuffling papers or straightening things out or anything else. Just stand and watch them. And it's kind of like this, yeah, there she is. And if something happens, she'll deal with it. It's kind of interesting how they kind of seem to relax. That's something that I need to, I'm curious in doing that more and becoming more used to it, the benefits that come out of that. It's just something I've been working on, standing and observing them sometimes. Or my class table is at the front of my classroom, and my desk is over in the corner, and then the student's desk. So sometimes I'm done teaching the class and I just kind of stay up at the table and they're all back at their desks working and I just sit there and watch them. Another thing to watch out for, and I know now looking back that this was a problem I had in my classroom, watch out for creating learned helplessness. So if we're not careful, we can make children become helpless, that they can't do anything without the teacher. Be reluctant to rush over and reteach what you just taught minutes before. And maybe I should say this here, that we're kind of maybe avoiding the elephant in the room, that first of all, the teacher needs to teach well. Anyway, be reluctant to rush over and reteach what was just taught minutes before. Let the children struggle a little bit and stretch their mental muscles. I know I spent lots of my years teaching. If I had a student that maybe learned a little harder, and I don't have lots of answers for you in that. But anyway, I know I kind of took responsibility, you know, stand beside their desk, make sure they're getting their answers in the right places, the right answers in the right places, or making sure they're redoing sloppy work, catching up on corrections. And, you know, as long as they get the right answers in there, okay, then my job is done. And they are carefree and aren't really taking any responsibility. Drifting along. So now, I did this. This is an example from last year. Long division problems are hard, and fifth graders struggle with them sometimes. And they'll ask for help on them. I've worked this one out. They learned after a while that by the time I would get to the desk, yes, Miss Susan, I have worked this out 3 times, and I still don't have the answer. And I'll agree with them that, yes, it is hard, but it does have a right answer. So you keep working. You have to conquer this. And then I walk away. And they'll let me know if they need more help, or I'll circle around and ask them. And sometimes then I'll say, well, why don't you take your book up to the class table and copy the problem on the chalkboard and work it out up there. There's something about rather than down at your desk, up on the chalkboard. And sometimes they would have to work it a few times, but then all the work is there in front of them, and they often will, oh, now I found my mistake. But the fact is they did it themselves, and they figured it out. I'll tell them, I know, division is hard, but you can do it. Another guiding principle, and I break this rule sometimes, don't ask a child why they misbehaved. I didn't ask Mom if I could say this, but I do remember Mom and Dad asking, so why did you do this and this when I was younger? And I didn't know. I couldn't come up with an answer, and often they probably don't know. Like, it's so tempting. Like, why did you do this? But it kind of tends to, I don't know, create this little bit of resentment between you and the student, and then if they're resenting you, they're not taking personal responsibility for the choice they made to misbehave. So don't ask them why. This next point, just hear me out. It might be controversial or it might be hard to understand. And this does come from classroom management. But eliminating rewards or point systems for behavior or grades or whatever from your classroom. And I know I'm still kind of thinking this through myself. It kind of made me feel a little freer when I realized I don't have to have that in my classroom. Like, you know, if you do everything well today or this routine or whatever, you get a point, and if you didn't, you don't get a point, and there'll be a prize at the end. But that's kind of what I'm talking about. Because those incentive programs can cause a lot of extra work for the teacher, which generally we don't need more work to do. It can cause children to cut corners or cheat a little bit, just because, you know, everybody wants to earn points. Another, maybe a big reason is it can reward expected behavior. Something that, yeah, I don't know, like maybe rewarding. I mean, this is an extreme example, but if you would give big praise, like over-the-top praise to a 13-year-old for tying her shoes, like that's expected behavior. That's a little extreme, but the idea of it's expected behavior. And then incentive programs or the points or rewards, it kind of creates the need to come up with bigger ones or match what you did last year. The students that are coming into your class know what you did with the previous students. I used to kind of feel guilty that I wasn't doing as many fun days as I perceived other teachers were doing. I remember one time a friend emailed me a list from another teacher of the fun stuff they had done every day in February, like, I don't know, slipper day or candy day or whatever, all of those, and I was I was like, wow, I can instantly get the feeling that she thinks I should be doing that in my classroom. And I think maybe that's when it kind of hit me, you know what, I need to be me in my classroom. I don't have to do what I think someone else thinks I need to do. I also kind of struggled with coming up with good incentive programs back, like when I kind of started teaching, thinking that's what you need to do. And then it's kind of hard to be completely honest, like, oh, well, probably I think the one I did was if something with math grades or, I don't remember, minutes adding up to an extra recess or something. And it's just kind of a lot of work to keep track of, and it's just so tempting to just give them the reward, whether they actually earned it or not, somehow rationalizing it. So it was kind of freeing to realize, you know, I don't really have to do something fun or out of the ordinary that disrupts my schedule every day of February or keep track of complicated point systems. And then having an incentive program kind of leads children to think they need to be rewarded for doing anything, behaving or working hard or anything. And I guess maybe my deepest concern about that is hard work is satisfying and rewarding all on its own. Like, having an incentive program kind of tells the children that school is boring, so therefore we need to make it more fun. I don't know if you listened into one of the Zoom meetings earlier this spring. I think it was Gerald Miller, I think, talked a lot about that. And I was just so blessed that he said something about the months of January, February, and March at school are like gold. Those are the months you get the most work done, because before Christmas you're getting ready for, like, you're teaching them how to operate in your classroom. Maybe you're, I don't know, remedying stuff that got lost over the summer. And once you hit April, May, we end, I guess our school goes to the end of May, you're getting ready for the spring program or school. It's getting nice outside. Those months in the winter are your prime time. So let's not say that this is boring and hard, therefore we need to do something extra. The hard work and working hard and being diligent is very satisfying on its own. Because our goal is for children to become inwardly motivated, or our goal is intrinsic motivation, for them to be inspired deep inside, not always we have to have this external pressure or bribing them to work hard or to behave. And then, so how do we do this? We need to have a detailed classroom plan that you teach and model clearly. And I'm going to tell you about mine, what it actually is like. Because then once that is in place, this plan that the children know what's expected in your classroom and what happens if they don't obey, then that's what carries the weight. That's the bad guy, as it were. All you are is the referee calling the misbehavior out like you saw it and calmly saying, this is what happens next. So you're not scolding, you're not lecturing, you're not trying to convince them to behave, you're not accompanying them to time out. We'll talk about time out. I use that in my classroom. You're not getting pulled into an argument with a child, or you're not pulling a child aside for a pep talk, like, this is what you should have done, or this is what you should do next time, or this is how you should feel about this. But no, this can create resentment, which takes the child away from looking inward and realizing that I made the mistake. You won't be coaxing or bribing them to behave. If they know exactly what you expect, then the misbehavior is on them. So how does this look in a classroom? This is another thing that really helped me focus this in, this whole classroom management plan. The goal of it is to safeguard the children's right to learn and enjoy school, their right to learn and enjoy school, and my right to teach great lessons. And when it's that simple, I'm safeguarding the children's, I'm repeating myself here, the children's right to learn and enjoy school and my right to teach, all of a sudden all that other stuff kind of moves out of the box. You can kind of see what needs to stay inside, what we need to protect that environment, and what needs to stay outside of that environment. So I have 4 classroom rules in my class for my students, and these are straight out of Smart Classroom Management. You make them according to your classroom. I'll write them on the board. So the first one is listen and follow all directions. that I was getting mixed up with 2 and 3. Raise your hand before speaking or leaving your seat. And number 3, so much that comes under this rule. Keep hand, feet, and objects to yourself. And number 4, respect classmates and teachers. I always put an S on that one because any teacher at school is to be obeyed. Respected. We'll talk a little bit later about how to come up with rules for your classroom. And those, I told you, those are directly from Smart Classroom Management. I looked over the list he had and I was like, yes, I think that works in my classroom. And then I have, those are posted clearly and plainly on the wall in my classroom. He specifically says, don't make it fancy or, you know, decorate. It's just a plain, easy-to-read chart on the wall. And right below that, I have the 3 consequences that I use. So these are the rules. And remember, this is how I do my classroom and the consequences. Okay, so the 3 consequences are a warning, the first time a rule is broken, the second time is a timeout, I'll explain that in detail later, and then the third is a letter home, and also the child cycles back into timeout the third time, and any broken rules after that, they would keep cycling through timeout. And at first when I looked at that, I was like, that's too easy, like that's going to work magic in my classroom, how can it be that easy? It's not that by itself. It's how you've explained and modeled it, like demonstrated what it looks like, obeying a rule or breaking a rule, and exactly showing them what happens if they don't. And then following up with a promise to deal according to your classroom plan every single time a rule is broken. Okay, it's how you present them, teach them the rules and consequences, model them, and hold students accountable. Maybe I should stress that a little bit. Holding students accountable is very, very important. So this is what I would do to set up my classroom. I would first of all make my classroom rules. Sorry, I feel like I'm way over here on the board for you girls. But one visual he gives for making your classroom rules is drawing a rectangle on a piece of paper. Inside here, I can't quite remember how he describes it. Inside here is this safe, quiet place where the children's right to learn and enjoy school and your right to teach are safe in there. And then write all the misbehaviors you can think of outside there, like whispering, passing notes, touching other students as you walk by them, cheating, lying, anything that takes away, like, and the longer you think about it, that I actually found it maybe better when I was actually in the middle of teaching to think about what all those little things were, or maybe jotting them down as the school year went on, because you'll remember when they happen what all those little annoying things are. And then, once you have those things written outside the rectangle, make 3 or 4 rules that cover them all, like this, well, cheating would fit under 1, listening and following all directions. Or, I guess that one. So many things come under that one. But, and lying, I guess, would be not respecting classmates and teachers. Or your rule, all those little misbehaviors should fit under one of the simple rules. Because we want to keep the rules simple and short. But that's that really helped me when I was thinking about, okay, so how do I decide what rules I need or what is breaking a rule and what is keeping a rule, is to actually write that out on paper, draw my safe spot, and all the things that take away from that outside of that. And I know maybe this is, I don't know how common this is in our schools or not, but there's this idea sometimes of having the children help you make the classroom rules and like signing that they agree to obey them. He says, don't do that. You're in charge. You make the rules. You're the adult in the classroom. So that's with making the rules. Put all the misbehaviors outside the box that you can think of and categorize each one under one of your rules. And you make the rules. And then I already said this, but post them clearly and plainly on the wall, classroom wall, where they can easily be seen. And then on the first day of school, sometimes we have devotions all together with the whole school. If you do that, then you would proceed with this after that. But it's like as soon as it's you and your students in your classroom, you start explaining. In the first few minutes alone with your class, introduce and teach your plan. Your plan is your rules and your procedures and your consequences, routines. So go over your rules, explaining and showing what each rule means. And the students I had last year, I had them all the year before. So it was like they kind of knew coming into my classroom. They had older siblings. I think maybe they kind of knew what they were getting into. But last year it was like they kind of enjoyed that modeling and explaining. Because I would pick a child that was generally quite well behaved. Okay, well imagine that Megan got out of her desk without raising her hand and went to get a library book or something. And I would move through and explain, like have a child, imagine that this child broke this rule and then they broke this rule, and so they know what breaking a rule looks like. He also says that if you've modeled misbehavior, if you've showed them what it actually looks like, then they probably won't commit that misbehavior. They will break rules, but if you've modeled it to them, it's like they know that you know what they might be thinking of doing. I would model how to sit in a desk and listen. Like I would sit in one of their desks and show them like precisely how to sit and listen when I'm talking to them and giving instructions. I also have how they come to the class table. I always assign seating for every grade. Like my oldest sixth grader always sat at the end of the class table, and then there were two on the bench and one over here. Like that's just always how they sat at the class table. There was never this shuffle. Now, some of the things I'm telling you, in the back of my mind, I'm feeling guilty because I know we didn't always, like looking back, I know where we kind of messed up and I know why, because I didn't model clearly. So this is idealistic a little bit here, or it didn't always happen this way, but I know why. I would even teach them like how to come to the class table from their desk, like, you know, the most direct route instead of walking by other neighbors. Well, and then I would rearrange their classroom or their desks at the report card time, and then I would be like, I should rethink that and tell them now from where you're sitting, this is the best way to come to the class table. And sometimes if it got noisy and they didn't do so well, I'd send them all back and we would try again. Model how to raise their hands to get permission to leave their seat and get a tissue or a dictionary or something. I did not tolerate waving and grunting. I said, I'm not going to answer. Like, that's, you don't do that. You raise your hand. I showed them exactly what I meant. It really helped me to have that rule about raise your hand before speaking or leaving your seat, because I used to kind of do this thing where, one person on the floor at a time. If you look around, there's no one else, then you can go do what you need to do. It's in the classroom. But they would forget or not pay attention. I think, honestly, sometimes they needed something and they forgot to look around, or someone else was up in the book corner kneeling down and they didn't see them. And then I would kind of frown at them because you're not supposed to be up, but I didn't do anything about it. It's like this just cleaned that up for them and for me. Now I nod if they're allowed to get up. And then I can also kind of control who's on the floor. And if I know people are up, I had to kind of get over this thing of feeling compelled. As soon as they raise their hand, yes, you may go. Do what you need to do. They can wait. I'm the one in charge of when they leave their desk. I also use flags in my classroom. I've done it for years. I don't know how I would teach without it. I just have a simple wooden spool hot glued to the corner of their desk, dowel pins from the dollar store with red felt flags, and the flag just lays on the corner of their desk. And they put that up when they need help with their schoolwork. So that's how we could eliminate. That's how I knew when they raised their hand, it was usually something I could just nod and they could go. And all I need, I say, use your flag. If it's not something that I can just nod to you for, then you need to use your flag. And then move into show. This is what I would do next. I would move into showing what happens when they break a rule. So a warning is just that. It's a warning that, hey, you broke a rule and you are on the edge of another consequence. It's not meant to shame you or anything. It's just, hey, I'm giving you a warning because you forgot to raise your hand before you left your seat. Or I am giving you a warning because you threw a eraser bit at so-and-so. Like, I'm just giving you a warning. And he talks a lot about delivering that quietly and calmly and you're not scolding and not lecturing. And then a second infraction puts them in timeout. I had two timeout desks in my classroom. So I had one, I guess my desk was in this corner. I had one facing the wall over there, and then there was a window kind of behind my desk. I had another one facing that way. Because, yes, I would sometimes need two timeout tables. So if this is your second consequence, you need to go to timeout because you spoke without raising your hand or whatever the rule was. And they take their work and they go to timeout. But the thing is, they've broken out of that quiet space of where their right to learn and enjoy school and my right to teach has been broken, so then they're temporarily not a participating member of the classroom. It really stresses, you don't send children out of the classroom for timeout. It's just at the side, and that's where they are for timeout. You don't accompany them to timeout. You don't lecture them or talk them over there. You tell them to go, and then they need to go. And but they're still responsible to do their work. They don't sit in timeout and do nothing. And I even modeled to them exactly how to sit in timeout, kicking the wall in front of you or messing around or turning around in your chair or goofing off is breaking another rule, and your timeout is automatically doubled. And timeout is 12 to 15 minutes. And at first I was like, whoa, okay. But they kind of need that much time to sit and think. And if you have resisted scolding and lecturing and they're not resenting you, they're sitting there and they're thinking personally about what happened and their choice and why they're there. So I just kind of keep an eye on the clock, and at my convenience, because I teach in a multi-grade classroom, I finish the class at the table or whatever, and I go tell them that, let me know when you are ready to leave time out, and I walk away. I'm right down to the nitty-gritty. I'm telling you exactly how I do it. And then I walk away, and then they raise their hand when they're ready. Sometimes they were in the middle of writing an answer. But then when I see their hand up, when it's convenient for me, I circle back around and I answer them, and they say, may I go back to my seat? And if I feel like, yes, they're ready, then I let them go. I say, yes, you may. And they pick up their things and go back. I even model to them how to ask respectfully to go back to their seat. And then a third infraction puts them back in timeout, just like that. I explain to them they need to go back to timeout. And then there's also a letter that they need to take home to their parents. And I used his letter. It's on the website. It's a form letter. All it does is let the parents know. It has the rules listed on it, which rules they broke and how many. And it needs to be, I sign it at the bottom, and it needs to be signed by the parent and brought back the next day. Now, the trick with this is the parents need to know ahead of time before you send the first letter home. I've had success with this in my school situation. You might want to think that over. You might want to talk with your school board. You might want to figure out what works best for you. You might know the school parents you're working with already. But parents are usually, I found, are happy for you to deal with what happened at school. They want to help you as much as they can, but they want you to be in charge at school, and they want you to deal with it. So, and then all that is a letter home, just so they know. And there's something about the weight of that letter that I give them at a convenient time in the day that needs to go in their lunchbox or backpack and go home. And, yeah, for them, I don't think I've had any bad experiences with those going home. I mean, there's some times that I had to follow up. A child forgot to deliver it, and so I talked to the parent, and we brought it back. So what I usually would do is in the first week of school, or I think I've done this a couple years now, is send a letter home to the parents explaining what my classroom plan is, explaining, like I'll even send a sample letter home, and I'll tell them kind of what my homework policy is, what the restroom policy is at school, stuff like that. Just kind of let them know how I'm going to operate my classroom. So they've been in time out the second time, and they know they're going to take a letter home. And then there will be children that will break more than three rules in a day. So they just will cycle through time out as many times as they need to. But there's only one letter that would go home as a third consequence. Okay, so you've clearly explained and modeled your rules and what breaking them looks like. And then you make a promise to the children. You promise that you will follow through with your classroom plan just as it's written every single time. And then this promise holds you to being consistent. And that's where this would come in so helpful. Like, because I know I struggled at the beginning. Okay, this sounds really good, but what is my plan? Like, what is it that I'm explaining to the children? Well, it's my routines and procedures and rules and what happens if you break a rule. Like, that's what needs to be so clear. And that's what kind of, like, why did I teach so long without realizing that I get frustrated at you because you misbehave, but now I realize you're misbehaving because you didn't know what I exactly meant for you to do. Like, it clicked, and I was like, well, the poor children, no wonder. And then Miss Susan is getting frustrated with them because they are not obeying. I have this kind of embarrassing time that it was a busy school year. This is several years ago before I was, I was struggling with managing that big class that year. And these three boys, they were just kind of cutting up, and I was finally frustrated. I said, okay, you go out and you run around the loop, the driveway, the circle drive. And I remember the one especially got this kind of gleam in his eye, and they all headed for the door, and I said, no, one at a time. And it was just, it embarrasses me to this day how frustrated I was, and they were all excited about going outside. It was not thought through ahead of time at all. Okay, so I've modeled and explained clearly and made the promise to them. And then I jump into teaching a routine, that first period of the first day of school. And the routine I like to teach is a morning routine. What to do from the moment they walk in the door until school starts. What they do. So I tell them, I'll just kind of run down through this quickly. This is what my morning routine looks like. They say good morning. The shelf with hooks is in my classroom, kind of like that. They put up their lunch boxes and jackets and backpacks. And if there's any homework, they bring it to their desk and lay it on the corner. And I have my students copy their assignments from the chalkboard. Sarah and Cheryl remember that. I still do that. They have the cutest student planners at Dollar Tree. I'm not teaching this fall. I'm going to miss buying school stuff. I have this feeling I'll still be buying some. Anyway, so they all have their own little planner that they copy the assignments from the chalkboard. The assignments stay up there throughout the day. I think maybe when I taught you girls, our chalkboard was so small, I would need to erase them sometimes. I wonder if that's when I started. Anyway, I kind of had this idea. It's probably good to teach them how to do that. I'm lapsing back now into other years. I know I had one student, he was kind of frustrated. Why does he have to copy assignments? And then he moved to the big room, and I remember the big room teacher telling me that he was kind of frustrated with the way the teacher wrote assignments on the board, you know, knowing what everything is. And the teacher's like, well, why don't you write down your assignments? And he was like, I guess maybe he should. But that encouraged me that it's a skill, that it's okay to teach them even if it doesn't look like it has a lot of point right then. But my students enjoy it. I often see them pull out their planner later and cross off what they did. So they say good morning, hang up their stuff, put their homework on their desk, copy their assignments from the chalkboard, and then they go get a drink and use the restroom if they need it. And then they're there visiting with the other students. We definitely had to tighten things up last year with our schedule just because of restrictions on schools in Alberta. So they basically stayed in my classroom. And then they were responsible to watch the clock, and when it was 8:55, they were supposed to be heading to their seats, and I rang a bell, and we had a five-minute section of time I called bell work. And it just got them in their seats working quietly before the day actually started. I bell work could be numbering their spelling notebook because we had a spelling test that day, or we had done one the day before, and in CLE language arts they have the spelling list. I would have them cut it out and write out their spelling words for the day. And if you teach CLE language arts, you might know what I'm talking about. I'd let them start their math review And some days I would just let them read a library book. Oh, they were always excited those mornings. And then they just work until I stop them and call the roll. My timer didn't stop them. I stopped them. And if it ran a few minutes past 9, that was fine. If a student got there after 8:55, he wasn't late. He just walked through his routine and caught up with us, and it was fine. Everybody was quietly working. Then model that routine yourself. Model it with a couple students is what I would do. And then when I felt like they understood pretty well what to do, I'd have them all take their backpacks, lunchboxes, books. We'd make sure we had imaginary homework. Send them out the door, and they would do the morning routine. They would come in a few at a time, say good morning, follow through with the routine, and I would just sit and observe, resist the urge to talk them through it at that point. And when everyone's in their seats doing what they're supposed to, then go ahead and tell them if they followed it exactly like you taught it to them or if there were things they messed up on. I think he even says it would be good to find something they did wrong and explain it to them and have them practice again. He said don't cut out detail, add detail, like, and make sure it's clear and everything, but then it's like the more detailed it is, you can kind of see their excitement growing. They're going to do this, and they're going to do this right. And then practice with them until they can prove that they know exactly what to do. And then after that, it becomes the routine. And if a child or two messes up, well, then you follow through and hand out a consequence. If the whole class blows a routine, you need to stop, back up, teach it again, start over. If most everybody messes up on it, then it comes back to you. You need to teach it again. And then this will set the tone, that first morning of school, teaching this routine, for kind of everything you teach after that. Excellence is required, and we can do it. I have routines for coming to the class table. We had very structured going to the restroom and having a snack and going for recess this year because I actually loved it. We did that all, like 10 minutes before recess, my timer would go, and they knew what order to go in, go out the girls one at a time, while the boys are also going out one at a time, use the restroom, come back in, get their snack, eat it at their desk, and then at recess, out they went. And I had this amazing co-teacher that took care of most of my recesses. They played with her kids. Okay, we need to wrap this up here. One other little detail is you'll have to keep a consequence log if you do this. You will need to have a piece of graph paper, a simple grade book with every student's name, and which rule they broke when during the day. There's no way you can remember everybody's infractions. Sometimes I can't even remember why so-and-so, what it was that they did that broke rule number one later in the day, but at least I have it recorded. And you might notice that students are, breaking the same rule all the time or something, or behavior patterns. So it's about removing the tension and stress that you are causing in your classroom by not being sure what you're doing, what you expect of the students, and then they aren't performing and you're getting frustrated. Rules and boundaries make children feel safe. And if they aren't sure where that is, they will push. I had some kind of not so nice experiences. I went to 2 funerals a week or so apart, and I had substitutes. And my children didn't really behave. They were passing notes, and one substitute told me she found eraser bits all over the classroom, but she could never catch them doing it. And it just really helped me understand that the adult in charge must be in charge, kind of at the point where I'm ready to tell the substitute instead of the children to behave. Like, I mean, I know that sounds weird, but even the good children will misbehave. If there's some other adult in the classroom, they want to know what they can get by with. So, let me think here. And don't be surprised when children slip up. Growing up is hard. Children will make mistakes. And when they make them, then that's your teaching opportunity to follow through and be accountable. It's okay. And being that leader that's willing to stand up for what's best for them, go ahead and hold them accountable. That's one of the best things you can do for them. So I have the handout that you are welcome to take. I also went so far as I have, these books are really easy to order on Amazon. I have 5 of them here. If you want to get your hands on one today, talk to me about it. It better be today. I'm not sure if I'm going to be here tomorrow. This is another great book, Happy Teacher Habits. And then I would highly recommend this one, The Smart Classroom Management Way. This is like, is it 10 years of blogging on his website that's in this book, 10 years of writing? There's the total classroom makeover that is in 18 short, simple lessons. There's the classroom management secret. And there's Dream Class. Anyway, I think at this point these are most of his books. I'm delighted so many of you came. Thank you. You are dismissed.